When you think boots, you think Ariat. You think comfort from day one and durability to day 1,000. You think steel toes on the job, square toes on the dance floor, with style that owns a Saturday night and still looks sharp enough for Sunday dinner. And through every mile and every moment, you're thinking Ariat boots. Boots that show up, stand out, turn bad ideas into better stories, and still punch the clock come Monday morning. Now, it's time to stop thinking and start shopping. Find your Ariat boots at Ariat.com or a retailer near you.
Entering Kenmore. Doors will open on the left.
How's it going, everyone? Welcome to episode 29 of Entering Kenmore. I am David Azer alongside Zach Coe. Zach, bit of a longer turnaround this time. A lot to talk about. The Boston Red Sox have been playing very good baseball, really, since the trade deadline. And the biggest news of the past week is that Roman Anthony has been extended. It 8 years, $130 million, which with a bunch of escalators. So how are we feeling?
Yeah, I mean, I'm pumped. Obviously, this was something that was going to be looming over all of our heads for the foreseeable future, especially for the rest of this year after Jacob Wilson hits the IL with a broken forearm, I think it is. So that puts Roman in, not the leader in the clubhouse, but the leader in the clubhouse to come in second behind Nicholas Kurtz for Rookie of the Year, which of course would have given him the extra year of service time and left the Red Sox with nothing. Now you don't have to worry about that. Obviously, the escalators in the deal include where he finishes in Rookie of the Year and also MVP voting moving forward. But I'm happy to see them finally get it done. And I know that there were clips going around social media, some of the radio scene being like, oh, like this is because they're cheap. Like, no, this is not because they're cheap. Because if they were cheap, they would have played out the arbitration process for however many years. But it would have been 3 years until he hits ARB. And then they would have paid him $4 million, $7 million, $15 million, $30 million, and then they would have traded him. But this is them getting ahead of it, doing what the Braves did to build their World Series core with Acuna and locking down a guy that they think is going to be a stud for the next 9 years. And it works out nicely for Roman, too, because he's going to hit the open market potentially at age 31. So he's still going to be in a really good position to cash in there. Like, even if he hits all the escalators and banks 200 mil, like he could be a $400-500 million player, maybe even more depending on the landscape of the sport in 9 years. Like he could end up making like $600-700 million over the course of his career, even still.
Yeah, and the impressive part is that this shows a mindset shift in the Red Sox front office, because obviously we saw Mookie Betts, they played that out and ended up trading him to the Dodgers, where fans were absolutely furious about this. And the Roman Anthony situation had the potential to get to that point. Obviously, it was a long time down the road, but nothing about the front office approach had shown us that they were going to do anything different up to this point. And like the point you were mentioning about the certain radio people talking about how this was a silly extension, none of those top prospects earned those extensions before they got them. Jackson Churio got one. Julio Rodriguez got one. Ronald Acuna, like you mentioned, got one. You're paying for the potential.
And ultimately,
I think he'll be worth way more than that by the time this contract expires. So to me, it's an absolute steal.
Yeah, so my buddy texted me when he saw that clip. He was like, breaking news, the Red Sox extend Roman Anthony. And now for instant reaction, two guys who don't watch the games. Like... it is something like for that to be the immediate reaction. But you mentioned the shift in philosophy. I mean, the Mookie extension, that like we know they made him offers, but it was too late. They made him an offer of 10 and 300 when he was 2 years away from hitting the open market. At that point, he might as well wait. You could argue they even waited too long with Rafael Devers. I mean, you were forced to give him 313 whatever million dollars, and if you had done it 2 or 3 years earlier, it would have cost you significantly less than that. And then that deal wouldn't have looked as bad. And it wouldn't have been like, oh, like we have to find someone to take this deal when trading him. Like for them to be proactive about it and lock him in at a really, like, I'm going to call it a team friendly number because I think that's what it's going to work out to be. But it's encouraging to see they've done it multiple times now, first with Rafaela and Bayo and then with Campbell and now Roman. And I assume that Marcelo, once he gets right and starts hitting the ball, is going to be hopefully right behind those guys.
And that's the biggest thing, is locking up that young core, especially you add Crochet in there if you want to put him in that same conversation. This whole championship core that you feel like you're building right now is signed for the foreseeable future, and they're all taking pretty big steps forward aside from Christian Campbell. Even Campbell has been producing way more in AAA right now. I imagine we'll see him back in the major leagues at some point, probably in September, maybe end of August as well. But the future of this team was very much in doubt. And Will Fleming and Will Middlebrooks were talking about something. And I think it's very, very pertinent here, because a lot of fans didn't really have any players that they could gravitate towards. You didn't have that player for the past couple of years where you had Rentals, Tyler O'Neill, Duvall, people like that, who you wanted to buy jerseys of, who you knew were going to be here for the foreseeable future. Now you got guys like Crochet, Bayo, Roman Anthony, Christian Campbell, all these guys who you can slot into your lineup for the next 7-8 years and be comfortable buying their jerseys. I think that's a big thing that maybe people aren't talking about as much.
Yeah, I mean, even like not as much this year, because now you're seeing those players, like you mentioned, like get locked up and be worth going to the team store and spending $250 on a jersey of. But you see Mookie jerseys, you see Ortiz jerseys, you see Pedro jerseys. I mean, for the last however many years, I've been recycling my Xander jersey. First, it was a Justin Turner jersey. Then it was a Dom Smith jersey. Now it's an Alex Bregman jersey. And it's finally, for once, like I've been saying for the last however many years, that I was probably going to end up with a jersey each of Meyer, Campbell, and Anthony. But like, I'm going to probably go out and buy a Anthony City Connect jersey, like, as soon as I can, like, because we know he's here. Like, and it's a little bit easier with those young guys because you know that they're here for at least 6 years. But like you mentioned, like Tyler O'Neill, Adam Duvall, like, those were fine players, but they're not guys that you're rushing to get jerseys of. And aside from Devers, they didn't have that guy. Like, Sale's another one that you could have had, but again, like, he was not really on the field ever. So, like, yeah, you can get a Chris Sale jersey, but, like, you're going to wear it when he's on the injured list, which is, like, through no fault of his own, but it's just an unfortunate, like, fact of the matter. Like, it's finally they have guys that are worth going out and spending the inordinate amount of money that they're looking for jerseys.
And by the way, the team store has really gone downhill from when we were little. I know, I don't know if you remember, but when it was probably around like 2012, 2013. You used to walk in there. There was a whole grid of player jerseys, like every single player on the team. Yeah. And now you got to spend $250 to get a jersey. And the selection is not very good still.
No. And even like, I remember, obviously it was when they first came out, but I was at Fenway the first day they launched the City Connects, and they had like 17 Garrett Crochet jerseys. And that was it. Like, I overheard a team store rep talking to customers being like, oh, yeah, we only printed 50 Garrett Crochet City Connects. Why would you do that? Like, it was all Duran. It was all Bayo. The Christian Campbells were nowhere to be found. I would have walked out of there with a Christian Campbell City Connect that day if you could find it. But all Duran, all Bayo, all Devers. Masataka Yoshida, for whatever reason, they love pushing the Masa jerseys.
Yeah, they do.
Like, they were the, and like, it, just quick jersey rant aside too, I hate seeing like David Ortiz City Connects, like, I've seen a Andrew Benintendi yellow before. Like, Ortiz is one thing, like, at least his numbers retired. Like, you're walking around wearing 34, you know it's an Ortiz jersey, but an Andrew Benintendi City Connect? Like, what are we doing here? Like,
they do that all around the league, too. Like, you'll see, like, Hank Aaron City Connects. It's like, what are we doing, man? I hate the idea of buying a jersey of a legend if they never actually wore that jersey.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's so stupid. Like, why are we selling Dan Ortiz City Connects? Give me a break.
I mean, I guess I have seen a lot of those, so I guess maybe they're flying off the shelves more than we thought, but me personally, I would not buy one.
I mean, in year, like, with the yellows, I could see pitching the yellow David Ortiz jerseys, because, again, like we mentioned, like, who do you have to buy a jersey of? Like, I have a Devers City Connect, and I have a Bogarts, well, now a Bregman City Connect. But even the, like, Bogarts one that I got it at Marshall's for $30, like, 3 months after he left. So, like, I just kind of lucked out that they've been getting, like, well, first of all, two Red Sox Twitter lore legends of Justin Turner and BDSM. which was fun. But now that we finally get a guy in Bregman, it's nice to be able to wear it again and be like, oh no, this is my Dom Smith jersey.
I feel like that the number two is one of those numbers where they just pass it around pretty much every year. You're going to have someone wearing it. Maybe it's a Dom Smith or maybe it's an Alex Bregman. And I think that is another good talking point is, could an Alex Bregman extension be next? Because we were talking about that before the trade deadline. Now they're obviously extending Roman. Could we see that happen before the end of the season? I am not super optimistic on it, but I know people have been talking about it.
Yeah, and I saw that they're like $60 million away from the luxury tax next year with what they have on the books. The Trevor Story opt-out conversation has all of a sudden gotten interesting. The Bregman's going to opt out, so we don't even have to have a conversation of whether he is or isn't, but he's going to opt out. And now the Giolito option has also gotten increasingly interesting. It seems like he's going to hit that innings mark to trigger the potential, I think it's a mutual option, whereas if he doesn't hit it, it's just a club option for less money. So it's going to be a mutual option, I believe, for $19 million for next year. And honestly, if I'm Lucas Giolito, I'm opting out of that too. Because, like, I mean, obviously $19 million is $19 million, but you're a guy with injury, with an extensive injury history. You were 3 years ago now, or 2 years ago now, however it works out, the worst pitcher in baseball. You got DFA'd twice. You finally come to Boston, you find something, and you return to, I don't want to say Cy Young form, because I don't think he's returned to Cy Young form, but, I mean, he's been a top, what, 20, 25 pitcher in baseball?
Yeah.
For the last, since May 1st, pretty much. So if you're him, why don't you look to go cash out? Like, maybe you wind up right around that 19 AAV, but for more years, you guarantee yourself that money. And especially with the lockout looming after the, is it after the 26 season or after the 27 season?
I think after 26.
So you have the lockout looming after next season. You might as well lock yourself into that money. So if he hits that innings limit, I'm not necessarily expecting Lucas Giolito to be here next year either.
Yeah, it's interesting because I think both of those guys would come back. Like, Bregman has obviously gravitated.
Mm-hmm. Bregman's sitting there just going, please, 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 every single time they put a microphone in front of his face. I mean, he did it again on Apple TV on Friday night. Just being like, I'd love to sign an extension here. And they still, again, I said this a couple episodes ago, I have yet to see them put the Rafael Devers money towards the Boston Red Sox. Liverpool has received more of that money than the Boston Red Sox. And, oh, they signed Roman to the extension, blah, blah, blah. Like, yeah, that's good. They should. He's still only making like $4 million next year. So, like, what better use for the Rafael Devers money than to make it so that Alex Bregman never wears another uniform in his career, like he's been begging you to do?
And it's just such a good fit. Like, I just can't picture him in another uniform at the moment. Like, and that feels a little crazy to say. Obviously, he's only been here for a little bit over half a season, but it's like the way he's gravitated towards this young core, the way he just exudes winning, especially in this market, I think it's a perfect fit, and they would be absolutely stupid to let him go. And also, Giolito, around the trade deadline, mentioned he did not want to be moved. So even if he were to opt out, I think we would be his first choice to come back.
Yeah, and on the Bregman point, it's a lot like JD Martinez in 2018 when he first got here. I mean, you have the young core of, I mean, Bogarts wasn't necessarily young per se at the time, but you have your core of Bogarts, Devers, Betts, and you're kind of just missing the, like, every good Red Sox team has had a DH that, like, solidifies the lineup. Obviously, this one doesn't because they've been rotating it, but you kind of were just missing that, like, veteran bat, that veteran presence, similar to what we've seen these last couple years. And obviously, Bregman comes in spring training and immediately buys suits for Meyer, Campbell, and Anthony, which I wonder if anybody asked Roman yesterday if that was the suit that Bregman bought him. but he immediately just comes in and becomes that same kind of like hitting coach presence on the field that JD Martinez was. I mean, again, we had the suit story. We had the story of them sitting in the cafeteria in Fort Myers, just talking to Bregman for like an hour about hitting. And even when he was on the injured list, he took up the Trevor Story seat right next to Cora, where he's essentially become a player coach for your team. Like, that type of player is just so invaluable to your organization. I mean, it'd be like bringing in JD Martinez on a one-year deal pretty much. Like, it's just something that has to get done.
Yeah, I love JD Martinez. He's one of the only Red Sox jerseys I have right now. It's the World Series patch. Okay. He's one of my all-time favorite players, and it was so cool to see him in Boston, and the impact that he had on that 2018 team was just obvious from the start. So I definitely agree with that comparison, and you need to extend him for many years to come.
Again, especially because every time they put a microphone in front of his mouth, he's like, please, please extend
please.
Me. Extend me. I'm begging. Craig, if you're listening, I am begging you, extend me.
Like, yeah, and people, just, once the Astros got Correa back, they're like, oh, Alex Bregman's going back. Well, Correa's playing third base, so I don't know where you're putting him.
Yeah, I don't know what they're – Astros fans are fucking brain dead. Like,
yeah,
I
just, they were not nearly as bad as Dodgers fans the weekend before, but I was not a fan.
Yeah, well, I mean, the Dodgers fans, like, talk about those people. Like, credit to them for traveling or everything, but them being like, we come over and we take, like, the city over. Let's march around the streets. Let's go, Dodgers! Like, shut the fuck up, dude. Like, how'd 2018 work out for you, fucking losers? You have a Mickey Mouse ring and a ring from last year. You have one World Series ring in the last 20 years and have been, or more than that, what? The last one that they won before the Mickey Mouse ring was, like, the 80s?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, so you guys aren't fucking relevant. Go show up in the third inning in LA. Like,
yeah, and you should have way more rings with that Avengers-ass roster you guys are trying out.
Yeah, and they've been fucking terrible this year, too. Like, I mean, not to go back to the series from almost 2 weeks ago, but they've been awful. Like,
yeah.
Like, yeah, the Tungsten Arm O'Doyle tweet that always went around with the Angels. Like, that's what Shohei did last night. He walked twice, went deep, struck out 8 guys, and the Dodgers lost to the Cardinals.
And it's cool because you see the Dodgers kind of faltering. Obviously, the Brewers are playing at an otherworldly level right now. But aside from that, you really don't see many strong contenders. Like, you can't pencil anybody into the World Series. So the fact that the Red Sox are firing in all cylinders right now is an awesome sign.
Yeah, it's just, it kind of makes, to me, the deadline a little bit more frustrating, which I know we're going to get into the deadline, but it's just like, man, like, if they had, like, we saw Dustin May yesterday. I never want to see Dustin May pitch again. Like, he is such a boring watch. Like, in the pitch clock era, it's tough to really drag, but Dustin May, he finds a way to take his sweet-ass time out there on the mound to throw just absolute slop. Like, I've seen enough of Dustin May. It's been one start.
I'm with you there, and I know we'll get to the Royals series later. And the Astros series was obviously a week ago at this point, but total beatdown as far as I'm concerned. And you went against two of their best in Hunter Brown and Framber Valdez. You got to both of them. Obviously, Hunter Brown was pitching a gem, and you ended up with the Roman walk-off in the bottom of the 10th inning. But that was an electric game, kind of set the tone for the rest of the series. Then you go out, I don't even remember who, it was Colton Gordon or something like
that. Yeah, and Bueller, yeah, right?
Bueller versus Colton Gordon, if I'm saying that correctly. I could be mistaking him. I don't remember, but he's terrible anyway. And they got to him very easily. And then Framber Valdez absolutely imploded. I think it was in the 4th inning? Put up 6 runs against him. A lot of those were unearned, but he did not look good. And then you just ride that momentum into the Royals series. So that was pretty fun to watch. I was there for 2 of those Astros games as a fan, the first 2 games, and then I produced the 3rd one, and all were wins. That's pretty rare these days, I would say.
Yeah, I mean, I admittedly wasn't super locked in on this series because I was at a wedding. But I was listening to the radio call of most of all the games. I did miss the Roman walk-off, unfortunately, at the rehearsal dinner. And then Saturday, I was pretty plugged into the game up until the time we had to leave for the actual wedding. And then Sunday, I was locked in because we were driving to the airport. So I heard the radio call. But to see them, like, when you look at that type of series, especially coming off of the deadline dud again, like we talked a couple weeks ago, like, are they setting us up for a deadline dud? They were. But you look at this series and you're like, all right, it's Hunter Brown versus Cooper Criswell. And you have Walker Buehler pitching in a game this series, and then in the finale, you have to face Framber Valdez. It's like, all right, well, shit, like, this is a series loss. Like, let's just try to win Saturday and not get swept. Like, it's Walker Buehler on Saturday, but it's Colton Gordon on the other side. So you should be able to get to that guy, which they obviously were, but you get a gem. A little bit of a lucky start out of Cooper Criswell, if I'm to understand everything that happened in that one correctly, but
yeah,
you take them how you can get them. They don't ask how at the end of the season, they ask how many. So you take a win there against a guy who's probably going to finish third in AL Cy Young voting after Crochet and Skubal, which I do have a point on Crochet, but we can get to that later. And then obviously, like you said, you rattled Framber Valdez. You really rattled the entire Astros pitching staff. I don't know what it is about teams thinking that the Red Sox are stealing their signs, but for whatever reason, they get so many people pissed off about picking up signs. Like, here's an idea. Stop tipping if you're worried about it. And Hector Neris, he's chirping at Kyle Hudson on, was it Saturday?
Yep.
Yeah, he's chirping at Kyle Hudson on Saturday, and then John Boy did the breakdown, and, like, they weren't even picking up his pitches. So, like, what are you so rattled about, buddy? Like, Hector Neris is just a fucking crybaby. Like, that guy's a loser. Like, how he still has a job is beyond me, but, like, he does, and he's just a crybaby loser at this point.
Yeah, that game was electric from start to finish. He had, I want to say, 3 home runs in that game. And also the bench is cleared. I love seeing the bullpen guys run out and they're like, get there super late. And then it's like, okay, everything's fine. We're just going to walk back.
We're just going to walk back. Yeah. If they were really about that action, they'd start throwing hands in right field after, like, immediately after pouring out of the bullpen, they just start throwing fists right out there.
Oh, that would be awesome. I forget who said it, but somewhat recently I heard that we need to allow fights in baseball. I was a player. I don't even
know. I've been on this train for a while. We need more hatred in sports. Across all sports. Like, where were the days? Like, we need to go back to the days where there were, like, nightly Red Sox-Yankees brawls every time they faced each other, where, like, fans were getting spit on in the opposing team's stadium. Like, we shouldn't have Dodgers fans taking over Fenway Park and having that go unchecked. It's something that Coley joked about, obviously, on the 10. But one Dodger fan gets their ass beat at Fenway Park, that's going to make them think twice. Like,
oh, no doubt.
Like, same thing with Correa. Correa standing ovation. Who... All right, go ahead.
Oh, no, you're good. It was just Pete Alonso was the one who said he wanted MLB fights to be like NHL style.
Yeah, he's right. Don't boo him. He's right. Like, for that, like, I mean, we have Astros fans coming in, and I didn't hear this one, but Carrabas was like, it sounds like they're, like, in Houston welcoming Carlos Correa back to the Astros with the ovation they got, which I think I saw people push back on that. It was like, oh, like, I'm here, and it was mostly boos. So I don't know what went on with that, but, like, yeah, like, one Astros fan gets their ass beat going to Fenway Park. I'm sure there are some assholes from Southie or Charlestown or any number of these places that are willing to catch a charge to beat the shit out of an Astros fan.
Like, some of the people that have been sitting behind me at these games have been asking for it, and I have not been drunk enough to get to that point.
Well, I feel like it takes, like, a certain level of inebriation plus, like, a certain level of just being, like, a, like, white trash from, like, Revere.
to be able in a to drunk cell for the weekend.
Sit there, potentially catch a charge. Like, I'm sure there are people out there. It's not gonna be me, but I would just I'd be the guy standing in the background filming and eating popcorn, that's for sure.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, we do need to I will say Fenway in the last couple weeks has been absolutely rocking since Cora called them out at the after the Dodgers series, and obviously that was a bunch of weenies who just travel with the team and take over every single ballpark they go to. But since then, I mean, it has been loud there.
Yeah, and I mean, it's one of those things where, like, for the average fan, games like that get priced out. Like, tickets for the Dodgers series were, like, $100, $150 just to get in the door.
Right.
And the average fan just isn't going to pay that. But if you've already committed yourself to flying across the country to go see the Dodgers play at Fenway Park, you're going to be way more willing to pay that price tag. So, like, it makes sense why teams like that come in and pack the park. Like, and it's a problem that I'm sure not just the Red Sox are facing. Like, I'm sure all the big market teams are facing it. I know talking to people in Chicago when the Red Sox were in town for that series, that tickets were wildly expensive for that one too. So it's a problem across all sports that the money has just gotten so big that it's kind of priced out the fans that want to go. Like, I mean, it's why I go to more games in April and May than I go to in the summer, because those tickets are cheaper because people don't want to go in the cold. Like, it's a problem that they have to address. I don't really know what the solution is. Like, the money has gotten so out of control. And part of it is just the, like, state of the world and the state of the economy and everything, where the little guy has been set up to, like, essentially get fucked since the 70s.
Yeah.
But I'm not going to get into a whole rant on Reaganomics and all that shit and how it set everyone up to fail from then on. But something has got to change with the ticket prices, because the average fan just cannot be affording to pay $150, $200 to get into a Red Sox game in the regular season. Playoffs is one thing, but the regular season, like, you'd be hard-pressed to find me paying that type of money for a non-opening day, non-Yankees game.
Yeah, and even during the week, like, we have sellouts pretty much every night at Fenway Park, and it was rocking and rolling. Even last night when they were down like 6-2 or 7-2 when they got to the ninth inning there, there was still pretty much everyone was still there. There was not many people leaving early. And I know just one quick off from the Astros series is I think Jordan Hicks has has proven his worth. Not on the baseball field, but as a fan, I have a quick story about this. So my dad and I are big Garrett Whitlock guys. The jersey is hanging right there behind me. I don't know how to not mirror my background so it doesn't look weird, but it's sitting back there. We got to the game pretty early. We were hanging out by the bullpens, and my dad also has a Garrett Whitlock jersey. So we kind of draped them over the bullpen. Typically, we don't see relief pitchers out there during BP very often, but he was standing out there pretty much right in front of the bullpens. We tried to yell for him. He didn't really hear us. But Jordan Hicks, of all people, turns around, sees us hanging our jerseys over the bullpen, points it out to Whitlock. Whitlock comes over, talks to us for a bit, signs our jerseys. So I really think that's the most that Jordan Hicks has done for Red Sox fans all season.
Yeah, I think it is. And we can get into Jordan Hicks now, I guess. I've said it before, but I've seen enough. I've seen more than enough of Jordan Hicks. This guy just, he can't throw a fastball for a strike. It's just, it is what it is. He's useless at this point. There was a reason the Giants, like, I think I said this before, but if it was like, oh, all right, we'll take on the entire contract, but you guys have to take back the Jordan Hicks contract, I would have just eaten the 25 mil off the Devers contract and been like, you guys can keep that guy because he is trash. And at this point, like, you have the whatever remaining on the 12.5 $1 million from this year, and then 12.5 for next year, and then he's gone. Like, at this point, I kind of am just ready for a DFA at this point. Like, I just don't understand what value he's bringing. At the bare minimum, he needs to have his role vastly he needs to have his role vastly adjusted, because he cannot be, not that yesterday was a particularly high leverage situation for him, but he came in and immediately blew the game open for the Royals. Like, it's just, it's not working. And I just think that based on some of the things that we've heard about him on a personal level too, it's just, it's something that has to be addressed. And I don't know why they haven't done it yet. Like, at a certain point, like David Sandlin or Peyton Tolley or even Connelly Early, like, these guys can provide more for you in a bullpen role than anything that Jordan Hicks is doing.
Oh, no doubt. And I think it was the first game of the Royals series, just grabbing the box score real quick here. I want to say he pitched the ninth inning. No. So it must have been when?
He did get the ninth in one of the games. I forget which one.
Anyway, I know he had a decent outing in this Royals series before last night. So that made it me seem like, oh, maybe he's gaining some more confidence. Maybe Cora's gaining some more confidence in him to convert in these relatively high leverage spots. And then he laid an egg last night.
Oh,
and
my God. Quick stat for you, looking at the reference page.
Oh, boy.
Jordan Hicks has pitched, he pitched 48 and two-third innings for the Giants this year.
Mm-hmm.
Good for a negative 0.8 war. He has pitched 10 and a third innings for the Boston Red Sox this year and has already accumulated a negative 0.6 war. So in a quarter of the innings pitched, almost 20% of the innings pitched, he's already been just as bad by war.
And oh, that's
for
great.
The Red Sox. Like, holy what? Shit.
There's no value in throwing hard if you have no idea where it's going and you're just going to hang a pitch every single at bat. Like, these guys, these exit velos are crazy. It's 100, 110, 99, like, whatever you want to say. It's never soft contact with this guy.
No.
Like, he's never forcing ground balls. Even with the Rafaela play, remember, where he caught that absolute heater off the bat and then doubled the guy off at second base. Like, that was luck.
Bizarrely enough, he's still 96th percentile in ground ball percentage, which I just don't see. Like, I don't see that watching him at all. Like, I guess if the numbers bear that out, then the numbers bear that out. But he's also not missing any barrels. So, like, I don't understand, like, where the profile, like, it's such a weird savant page. Like, you would presume because he's missing a ton of barrels that he's not giving up hard contact, but he is. It's 20th percentile hard hit percentage. It's 34th percentile average exit velo. It's like, I mean, it's bad. He is really bad. Like, even the expected ERA is whatever. It's like middle of the pack. And obviously it's a 641 on the season, but he doesn't strike anybody out. He only has 8 strikeouts in 10 and a third innings since he's been on the Red Sox. Like, like you said, there's no value in throwing hard if you don't know where it's going and it's not missing bats, which is the case here. Like, once we already saw the end of the Alcala-holics era. It was a fun Linsanity run. I think I was the first one to jump on. I saw 2 pitches. It was a fastball and then a curveball in his first appearance, and immediately tweeted, "I'm all in on Alcala." but that run is over, and with Justin Slayton working his way back through to live hitters the other day off a mound at Fenway, so he's starting to get healthy. And then, of course, I mentioned it earlier, but the Peyton Tolley promotion, the David Sandlin promotion, and then subsequent move to a strictly bullpen move. Like, I think Sandlin could give you more in the pen right now than Hicks ever would, and let alone Isaiah Campbell. We didn't even get to him, who I think is the worst pitcher I've ever seen in my life.
He is horrible. Yeah, and especially when wins are so important this time of year, where you're already trotting out Walker Buehler and Dustin May every fourth and fifth day, you can't afford to have your bullpen blow these leads. And obviously it wasn't a lead last night, but like you said, it blew that game wide open to the point where you brought in Isaiah Campbell to finish out the game just to eat innings at that point.
Well, it makes me question why. Like, I know they're just transitioning Sandlin to a bullpen role, but why can't he make that transition at the big league level? Like, why do we have to fuck around with the Isaiah Campbells of the world?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, or even you call up, and obviously Criswell had a great start, a luckily great start against the Astros, but I would much rather see Sandlin or Tolley called up to make a spot start than Cooper Criswell.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, Sandlin, that's not going to be the case anymore because of the, but even like Kyle Harrison, like, I'd rather see Kyle Harrison every fifth day than Dustin May. Like, it's only been one start and they're still tweaking with things. I know the usage yesterday on the cutter was way up, and he said that the team views his cutter as a weapon. It's something he was only using 7% of the time with the Dodgers, but it was 30% of the time last night. But again, like, it's so arduous watching him pitch. Like, at least with Kyle Harrison, like we said, these are the guys that you traded Rafael Devers for. So far, we've only seen Jordan Hicks, and everyone is already sick of him. You traded James Tibbs for Dustin May, who we saw one start of, and everyone is already sick of. Like, I think I'm ready to see Kyle Harrison. I saw the numbers on Twitter earlier, but the start today in Worcester was really good. So, like, at this point, I think where it's time to see him, it's time to see what he has, like, whose spot in the rotation he takes, that's not my decision to make. I've seen enough Walker Buehler, and I've seen enough Dustin May after the one start, so.
Yeah, and I don't know if Craig Breslow is aware, but if the Dodgers don't want these guys, you probably shouldn't take on, you know, you probably shouldn't get these deals done with these guys. Like, why would you take the scraps of the Los Angeles Dodgers? Clearly, they couldn't make it work with either of these guys. And I know Buehler had a good postseason last year, but the regular season was awful. And Dustin May, he's pitched the most innings in his career. He's made the most starts in his career. Obviously, he's dealt with a ton of injuries this year. But the large sample size was not good. I just don't see why, of all the starters you could have gotten at the trade deadline, you pick Dustin May and are like, yeah, get this guy in the pitching lab. Yeah, they did pan. It was a last-minute thing.
I have the numbers on the Harrison start, but then we can get into the deadline discussion. This is from Ian Kundle, Sox Prospects. He says, impressive start for Kyle Harrison. 5 innings pitched, 2 hits, no earned, 3 walks, 7 Ks, 99 pitches, 61 of them for strikes. The fastball was really good with a 29% whiff today, which would rank 4th among major league left-handed pitchers. Minimum 300 four-seamers. Cutter and breaking balls also effective. Only 1 hard hit ball all game. And he's strung together a couple of pretty solid starts down there now. Like, I think we've seen enough of the arsenal tweak to add him to this rotation. And I mean, like I said, if they said, all right, we went hard after Joe Ryan, which, like, we know that they did, it didn't come to fruition, and we're going to bring up Kyle Harrison to be the 5th starter here because we didn't land a starter at the deadline, I would have rather that than Dustin May. Like, Dustin May to me is such an underwhelming move. Like, especially when you spend, like, again, like, we've harped on it a lot, but from the second that they traded Devers, they're like, we can't wait to buy at the deadline. Like, we're going to be the world's biggest buyers. Like, if you're selling, we're buying. And for them to be like, here's Dustin May, he's a rental and he's not the electric prospect that they were calling Ginger Guard when he was coming up, which ironically, he's been worse than Noah Syndergaard in his career. At least Syndergaard had the highs of the peak of his career. But, like, this is the guy we got. We panicked, and also we gave up another guy that we gave up Rafael Devers for to get him. So it's so underwhelming. Like, I would have rather just Harrison been the, like, and I would have complained about that too. Don't get me wrong. I would have complained if they said Kyle Harrison is our trade deadline acquisition in the rotation. But I'm also complaining about Dustin May. So at least with Kyle Harrison, we can say he's under team control for 4 years. Like, we want to see what we have in him this year. Dustin May's just gone after this year. Like, who cares?
Thank God.
Yeah.
Oh, man. But yeah, to quote Stephen A. Smith, we have been hoodwinked, bamboozled, led astray, run amok, and flat out deceived. And honestly, yet again, because every time Craig Breslow had a microphone in front of his face after the Rafael Devers trade deadline, and I've said this a bunch on this podcast, he was like, don't worry, guys, we're going to buy. Sam Kennedy, yeah, we're going to buy. We're all in on this team. What happened? Dustin May and Steven Matz. And Steven Matz, I will say, has been very good out of the bullpen. But it wasn't really an area of need. You didn't need another lefty out of the bullpen. Like, we see right now, Jordan Hicks and Isaiah Campbell are some of the righties we're trotting out there. You didn't bring in another righty? Like, I get you have Slayton, who's on the mend right now, and we should see him back before the season ends. But, like, another high-leverage arm? We didn't really get that.
Especially when you consider some of the prices that these guys went for. Like, Ryan Helsley was a guy that I talked about in our deadline preview. He went for Chris Cotillo, said it. The one evaluator said that a deal for the Red Sox might have centered around a guy like Miguel Blaze. A guy that we talked about that's Rule 5 eligible. Now, I don't think anybody's taking Miguel Blaze in the Rule 5 draft this year because he's only just getting to Double A, I believe. I think he was just promoted to Double A. So, like, I don't think that's a risk that they're going to lose him. But, like, if you're sitting here saying, like, all right, we have a chance to get a really elite, like, Ryan Helsley and Aroldis Chapman is probably the best 1-2 punch in a bullpen in baseball, if you get it. And, like, the Yankees, I mean, it's hilarious that the Yankees have assembled what their fans were calling the greatest bullpen of all time, and they completely imploded their first however many appearances that they've been there. But, like, if you're not worried, or, like, if you're not looking at, like, a Miguel Blaze package for Ryan Helsley being like, we got to get this done, like, and then being like, oh, let's just trade Blaze Jordan for Steven Matz, like, there had to be a big addition somewhere, I think. Like, it couldn't just have been what we ended up with, which was Steven Matz and Dustin May, especially with how they built everything up. If you want to say, hey, we made a real hard push at Joe Ryan, but ultimately we weren't able to get it across the finish line, that's fine by me, but do something else, other, like, elsewhere. Like, you were on it however many weeks ago, Eugenio Suarez to play first base. Like, they gave up nothing for Eugenio Suarez. Like, I like Tyler Locklear, but ultimately he was a guy that every time he's gotten a chance in the big leagues, hasn't really been able to put it together. Like, and part of that is inconsistent playing time, but part of that is he just hasn't been able to put it together. Like, and even if you don't land those guys, Josh Naylor, we broke it live. He didn't go for much of anything. Like, it's just, it's frustrating. Like, if you're at the end of the day, like, all right, we missed out on Suarez, we missed out on Naylor, let's pivot to Ryan O'Hearn, you can't even land him. Like, like, there had to be something else besides those two moves. And like, in the reports were on the Joe Ryan front that they didn't re-engage on Joe Ryan until like the 5 o'clock hour, like an hour before the deadline. And I was driving to down to Temecula from LA with my buddy, who's a Cubs fan. And we were joking that Craig Breslow and Jed Hoyer were taking the nap together. And finally they started making moves at 5 o'clock because someone, their alarm went off and they were like, hey guys, the deadline's in an hour. And they were like, it's in an hour. Like, like they were shocked. Like, it snuck up on them. Like, it, Joe Ryan, we've been hearing about Joe Ryan to the Red Sox for how long now? And they didn't re-engage on it until an hour before the deadline. Like, that's not the urgency that you want to be operating with. And then, especially as all these other names come flying off the board, for you to pivot to Dustin May is, and then overpay for him too, nonetheless. Like, they gave up more for Dustin May than the Rangers gave up for Merrill Kelly. Like, I don't understand the logic behind this. And it feels like kind of jaded to be like, all right, they're 7-1 since the trade deadline, to be sitting here bitching about the deadline. But like I said, like, even on Ryan Helsley, like, you need another high leverage guy. Like, who knows how Slayton's going to come back. Whitlock has been good as of late, but like, aside from that, like, Justin Wilson has started to slow down a little bit. We've seen Weiser show wear and tear. Bernardino is already back in AAA to give his arm a rest. Like, Hicks, you're hoping can be that guy, but he's been a train wreck. Like I said, I'm ready to DFA him. Like, there needed to be a big addition. Like, oh shit, we got this guy. And there just wasn't. Like, it should have been Steven Matz and Dustin May and a name. Like, if you're gonna still go out and get Dustin May, that's fine. He's a fifth starter, but it needs to come with another, like, bang. Like, here it is. Here he is. Like, here comes Josh Naylor. Here comes Eugenio Suarez. Like,
yeah, and it seems like they spent a lot of time trying to go after these starters with more than a year of control left, and none of those guys got moved. And I think the return would have been astronomical. Like, we heard that the Red Sox offered Yastinkson Garcia, Arias, and a bunch of other top 100 prospects, and ultimately still couldn't get a deal done. So, and a similar thing last year with Garrett Crochet is the White Sox were asking for, was it Roman Anthony and Meyer?
No, it was Crochet.
One. Okay. Well, even still, obviously you saw that price go way down in the offseason. So I'm relatively confident they're still able to get Joe Ryan in the offseason when teams know where they're at. And the Twins basically sold everybody else, so I don't know why they want to keep Joe Ryan around. But you have to pivot. You can't be moving at 5 o'clock, like, oh, let's get this mega deal done with Joe Ryan when you don't have any backup plan. It's too late for a backup plan at that point. And it was right around the deadline. I think it was like 5:55 where we saw Dustin May. And then we're like, that's it? Like, yeah. He wasn't even on our radar. And I obviously don't want him here. He didn't look good in his first start. And you can't afford to be messing with a player's full arsenal right now when you're in the heat of a playoff race. Like,
no.
These are starting to be scheduled losses. And obviously Buehler got lucky because Colton Gordon's terrible. But, like, now he's going up against, I think it's Michael King in this, or no, he's going up against Pavetta in this Padres series.
Mm-hmm.
So that's probably a loss. And not to jump ahead here, but, like, you can't afford to be throwing away these games this late in the year.
Not to mention, I mean, again, like, we're going to get into this Padres series, but you essentially chose Walker Buehler over Nick Pavetta this offseason.
Yep.
And, like, that's just the fact of the matter. Like, I mean, what a terrible decision that is looking like it is. And it could be a situation where it's like, all right, we've tried everything we could with Pavetta and it's just not clicking here. Like, it's time to, like, part ways on both sides. But, I mean, it's a, either way, it's a, misevaluation of talent on Walker, on the Walker Buehler part, because clearly something just isn't clicking with whatever they're trying to do with him. Like, he's just, he doesn't know how to pitch when he can't throw 100 anymore. That's what we're learning with Walker Buehler, and they're paying him $21 million to figure out that he doesn't know how to pitch when he can't throw 100 anymore. And like you said, it's just, it was too late to pivot to something by the time. And it, the reports are that they said pick two of the three of Toley, Justinson Garcia, and Franklin Arias, along with some of the other like back end top 10 prospects. So whether that be Brandon Clark or Miguel Blaze, who we mentioned, guys like that, in that Connelly Early in that range. Like, to me, I would have made all three available of Toley, Garcia, and Arias. Like, Arias is a shortstop in high A who's blocked. We know that Garcia is an outfielder who appears to be blocked, at least right now. And Toley, like, I like Peyton Toley. I think he's going to contribute to this team this year in a bullpen role. But what is Peyton Toley's, like, 90th percentile outcome? Is it Joe Ryan? Like, if it is, then what? There's a 10% chance that Peyton Toley becomes a pitcher as good as Joe Ryan. I think you just make all three available and add Joe Ryan, because I said it with Helsley. Like, if you have Helsley and Chapman at the back end of your bullpen, it's eighth inning, game over. Like, that's just the fact of the matter. If you're going into a wild card series and it's like, all right, here we go, wild card series, Garrett Crochet, Joe Ryan, it's series over. Like, you're moving on. Like, it's just, it feels like it was very short-sighted of like, all right, we're going to get Joe Ryan. And then the Twins just kind of played them. Like, Bradfoe said it in his reporting on, I think it was Saturday, that the Twins never gave them a price. Like, all right, like, this is what gets it done. It was just kind of Breslow throwing shit at the wall and seeing what sticks. Like, so he could have rattled off every single player in the organization, and they could have just said, no, that doesn't work. No, that doesn't work. No, that doesn't work. Like, it sounds like that's what was happening. It sounds like they were just seeing if they were willing to get stupid enough to put, like, Christian Campbell on the table, which I am very happy that they weren't. But at the same time, you need to have better recognition to that, like, that's happening. Like, you need to say to the Twins, like, all right, enough is enough. I am not just going to continue throwing shit at the wall here. What gets this deal done right now? And if they're not, if they just say, yeah, we're just waiting for you to get stupid and offer us like Campbell or Meyer, then you can say, okay, fine, here's our final offer. You have until 5:45 to accept it, because we have to pivot quickly. Like, that's what should have happened. And people complained that, oh, like, why isn't Theo there? Why isn't Theo there? We know he was. And I understand that it's a young CBO that's still kind of learning the, like, ropes. Like, we have to remember that Breslow wasn't in the front office when he worked for the Cubs. He was in his Cubs role living in Connecticut, or living in Newton, I think it was. He was living somewhere in New England, working in the Cubs front office. So this is a guy that still is learning the ropes of being in this role. And Theo was supposed to help him along in that role. And it just, like, he was in the room, but it feels like something that around like 5:30, he should have said, like, all right, man, like, listen, we're not getting anywhere with this. Like, we need to pivot somewhere else. Like I said, Merrill Kelly, I would have been perfectly happy with Merrill Kelly if you walked away with him. And again, you gave up more for Dustin May than the Rangers gave up for Kelly. And even some of the relievers, like, the reliever returns were so underwhelming. Besides Mason Miller, but, like, he's a different, like, Mason Miller better be the best starter on planet Earth that they gave up Leo DeVries for him.
Yeah, that was insane.
There had to be a pivot at some point that was more impactful than, oh, we got Dustin May as a rental to be our fifth starter.
Right. Because when you were mentioning the wild card scenario there, if you did have Crochet, Joe Ryan, then you slide everybody else down and you're feeling way better. You don't have a number two at this point. You're still like, okay, Lucas Giolito or Brian Baio could have the potential to be a number two in a playoff race. But how comfortable do you feel with either of those guys in the playoffs? I feel okay. I'd feel a lot better with a Joe Ryan or a Merrill Kelly or even a Zach Gallen or a Dylan Cease who didn't ultimately end up moving. It seemed like the asking price was a bit high for some of these starters, probably because none of them ended up going aside from Merrill Kelly and Dustin May, I guess. But it's like, why, why was there no backup plan? Why did we just throw darts against a dartboard and see if anything stuck for Joe Ryan up until, oh shit, it's 6 o'clock. Well, we can't do anything else.
Yeah, well, and that's the, like, it's like you mentioned, none of the controllable guys moved. Mitch Keller didn't move. Joe Ryan didn't move. Neither of the Marlins moved. It's just like there was no backup plan. The backup plan was, oh, fuck. Dustin May. Like that just can't be the case. Like, it's just, it's all the more frustrating that they're playing well right now too, because yeah, like I said, it feels jaded to be like the deadline sucked, but like also like, again, this team would be so much, you'd have so much more confidence in the team if it was like, all right, we have Ryan Helsley and we have Chapman and we have Merrill Kelly, or like, and we have Dylan Cease. Like, it could have been any number of those guys. Like, I just don't know what, and we weren't in the room, so we don't know what happened, but it just kind of feels like they spent all this time getting played by the Twins and Marlins, and then at the end of the day, we're kind of left standing there with nothing to show for it.
Yeah, I totally agree. And the 7-game win streak absolutely helps, like, right, yeah, after the totally deadline. But it all comes crashing down
when you see Dustin May last night. Like, the 7-game exactly win streak is great, but then you get the starter. You see this. You finally see the starter. Like, we heard for however long that they wanted to add an impact starter to the front end of the rotation, and all they walk away with is Dustin May. And then you watch him last night, and you're like, man, come on.
It was a tough watch. Like you said, there aren't many people who go slow nowadays with the pitch clock. Man, oh man. Those innings,
oh my God.
He only was out there for, what was it, 3 2/3? But it was very slow.
That fourth inning was the longest inning I've ever watched in the pitch clock era. That was a tough watch.
Mm-hmm. And I don't want to watch that every fifth day. Like, this is what we're left with. It's just not sustainable to me. And I get that you're trying to retool his arsenal right now, but you can't do that at the major league level when you're trying to make the wild card and even competing for the division at this point.
And like, what are you wasting your time trying to retool someone's arsenal who's going to be gone in 2 months anyways? Like, yeah, you should have just gone out and gotten a Merrill Kelly, gone out and gotten him. Like, I know I said that Zach Allen wasn't a good fit for the park with the home run thing. I would have taken him over Dustin May. Like, at least he's a name. Like, at least there's something in there that you know is a good pitcher. We've never seen it with Dustin May. Dustin May's like most hyped time came as a prospect. Like, he has never been able to piece it together from, like, that point on. Like, he was the guy that was, like, rumored to be the centerpiece of a Mookie trade, and that was the highlight of his career, pretty much. Like, at least with some of these guys, like, however underwhelming it may have been, like, to be like, oh, Zach Gallen, he's rocking, like, a 2.5 home runs per nine, but, or whatever it is, it's less than that. But, like, at least we know that it's in there somewhere. Like, this isn't the time to be tweaking with an arsenal of a guy that's going to be gone in 2 months.
Wholeheartedly agree, and it helped that you won the first two games, where I'm like, I feel okay if they end up dropping this Dustin May start, but I wanted him to look a little better than now he did. I mean, you go 3 2/3, you're shaky throughout the entire thing, and it's just like, what confidence should I have in you to keep you in this rotation?
Right, well, I mean, I think the confidence is just like, well, we have to keep him in the rotation.
Don't have any choice.
It's our deadline acquisition, like... it's very frustrating.
Mm-hmm. And we didn't really do a deep dive into the Royal Series. Did you want to touch more on anything there?
I don't think I have too much. Just quickly running back through it. I don't think I have too much. Like, Bailey Falter sucks. I knew that they were going to get to him. It's just one of those guys that you just have a feeling on. But Bayo continues to look good, 6 innings. Like, Cora kind of said it in either his pregame or postgame, I forget which one it was, where with Bayo, it's like he has one inning where he kind of labors, and then you look up and it's the sixth, seventh inning, and he's still out there going. So it's encouraging to see from him. 5 strikeouts, only 1 walk, 6 hits, 1 run. Like you said, Steven Matz looked good. We saw the end of the Jorge, Alcala era. It sucks that him and Justin Wilson both came in and then made you need to use your high leverage guys in Whitlock and Chapman. Uh-huh. Not the end of the world, but it's just one of those things where it's like, if we could have avoided them, like, that would have been nice. And then in game two, Garrett Crochet just doing Garrett Crochet things. I guess this is a good point to insert this conversation in. I don't understand why people are just like, be like, oh, well, Scooble's winning the Cy Young. Like, I don't understand why everyone has just kind of written in Sharpie that Scooble's going to win the Cy Young. Like, Crochet's been just as good.
Yeah, and I'd argue it's more impressive to go from the Chicago White Sox, who obviously you have never pitched this much in your entire career, and they gave him the extra couple days of rest. He did look a bit more shaky in this Royals start. I thought he was not finding the zone nearly as much. It was a little bit more shaky. But, like, they're neck and neck as far as I'm concerned right now. I know the ERA is a little bit, I think, Crochet's rocking like a 220 something.
I'm looking at it if you want me to rattle.
Oh, sure. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So Crochet's got a 224 ERA to Skubal's 218. The ERA plus is 189 to Crochet's 183. Crochet has two more strikeouts, but a slightly lower strikeout percentage. And Skubal has walked 19 to Crochet's 39. War, this is B War, so take that for what you will. Crochet's sitting at 4.7 and Skubal's sitting at 4.6. That is not 5.6, excuse me.
Okay. As far as I'm concerned, they're neck and neck right now, but I know my dad was talking to me about this earlier. Skubal's next couple starts are pretty easy. I think he sees the White Sox a couple times and a couple other bad teams there. So we could see this race get a little bit further apart, but as of right now, I don't know why people are writing Crochet off.
Yeah, I just don't I don't understand it. Like, at the bare minimum, like, oh, like, his war is higher. Like, I think that's what it comes down to, is that these have essentially just become war competitions, which is really stupid. Like, I just hate that has become the case. In F4, Skubal sitting at 5.7 and Crochet sitting at 4.8. But again, like, I just find it hard to believe that Tarik Skubal has been a full win better than Garrett Crochet in just watching them play. And it could honestly come down to just team performance, which team finishes higher, which I think you could argue that there's a really good chance the Red Sox finish better than the Tigers. They have not been playing good baseball as of late.
No, and they're only a couple games behind them in the American League, and you have a couple teams to jump there in the Blue Jays, the Astros, who have not been playing well either. But you're right in the heat of being the number one seed, and if some things shake out your way, and your schedule gets a lot easier after this next couple, this next road trip, where you see the Padres and then the Astros, you get back. You have the Marlins, who I guess are surging at the right time. Obviously, they swept the Yankees last weekend, which was absolutely hilarious. They were playing Sweet Caroline in the late innings there as the New York Yankees fans were leaving. But I'm pretty confident in the state of this team right now. It's just the starting rotation still leaves a lot to be desired behind Crochet, Giolito, and Bayo.
Yeah, it's like I said, it's just the certainty that you were kind of looking for in getting that number two. And like, it didn't even have to be a number two. Like, even if it's I think Merrill Kelly's a number three, but he at least gives you more certainty there. Like, if you have Crochet, Kelly, Bayo, Giolito, you feel a lot better going into a playoff series than you would otherwise. Like, right now, your fourth starter is Walker Buehler, who has the track record of a guy who performs in the playoffs, but like, based on what we're seeing out of Buehler, like, I would want to see it not in a start in the playoffs before we're like, all right, Walker, here's the ball in game four. Like, depending on what the series looks like, game four could decide a series.
No doubt. And usually you see your lower level arms in that spot. Like, we saw Eduardo Rodriguez, I think, in game four of the World Series, and obviously it worked out, but it's not a guy I feel super confident in. Like, and it's tough to have a strong rotation 1 through 5, but you can have a little bit less question marks than Walker Buehler and Dustin May.
Yeah, I think part of it is just the team's inexperience in the playoffs. Like, we've never seen Brian Bayo pitch in the playoffs. We've never seen Lucas Giolito pitch in the playoffs. Like, I mean, hell, we haven't even seen Garrett Crochet pitch in the playoffs aside from a relief role with the, was it 2020 White Sox, 2020, whatever year the White Sox went to the Wild Card Series. So, like, we haven't seen these guys in a playoff role besides Buehler. And like I said, Buehler has been great in the playoffs, but I'd like to see it before I like trust handing him the ball in a start. Like, and like what? So Buehler goes out in a game four and gets shelled, and then it's like, all right, Dustin May, here, trot in from the bullpen, because like you're not going to give him a start in the playoffs based off of that. What? And again, it was only one start out of Dustin May, but it just doesn't feel like the time to be tweaking with somebody's arsenal. Like, and I'm sure people will say, oh well, people wanted Lucas Giolito DFA'd in April, and look at how he's been now. That was in April. Where it's August 7th now. There's 40 some odd games left in the season. Like, this isn't like, oh, it's April, we have time to figure something out with the tilt in Giolito's fastball. There's 40 games left and we're in the heart of a playoff push. Like, there is no time to be like, oh, maybe we can tweak something with the cutter and make that more of a weapon. Like, if they're going to tweak something, it has to come like pretty immediately.
Yeah. And I know the pitching lab has been kind of back and forth on if it actually exists or not. But to me, I mean, you've seen the payoff with most of these pitchers. Obviously, it hasn't worked out with Buehler, and it's only been one start with Dustin May, but the cutter looked good. That was his best pitch, I think.
Yeah.
But aside from that, like, what else do you have?
Yeah, I mean, he was heavy sweeper in L.A., and mm-hmm. I want to say it was a pretty even distribution of his pitches, I believe. Let me bring back up the breakdown. But I don't know. Like, to me, it's just, I don't know. 11 swing and miss is fine on May yesterday, but I just don't see it. Like, part of it is like, part of it is just the eye test. Like, I just didn't see it with the eye test. Now my Savant doesn't want to load, obviously. Okay, whatever. My Savant doesn't want to load.
I got it. Yeah, if you want me to. Okay, so last night it was 29.7% four seam, also 29.7% cutter, then 26.4 on the slider, and only 14.3 on the sinker at 91 pitches. So yeah, he topped out at 97.
Or 3 2/3, which yeah, I believe the 97 is I believe the 97 is higher than what he was averaging throughout the year. So at least like on that front, it's a little bit encouraging that he's throwing harder. But again, like we talked about it with Jordan Hicks, it doesn't matter how hard you're throwing if what you're throwing is fucking slop.
Like, but also towards the end of that start, he was getting only up to like 92. Like yeah. It faded pretty fast.
Yeah, yeah, he's averaging, the average on the fastball this year was 94.9 so far. So, like, yeah, he's touching 97 at times and then falling off to 92. It's just, it's not something that I think you can rely on. And that is going back to his time with the Dodgers. Like, for that, like I said, for that to be your one, like, we're going to add an impact starter, here's Dustin May. Not that I think they've, like, called Dustin May an impact starter. I think they've, like, shied away from that for good reason, but it's just like, come on, we're expecting so much more. So for this to be the guy that we see and we're just immediately like, all right, that's enough.
So he must be making another start in the Astros series, or would it be the series after that? It would be in the Astros series.
Game two of the Astros series, game three of the Astros series.
Mm-hmm. Right now ESPN has it for game two. Who knows if that's accurate, but oh boy. Yeah, that was just it. I don't want to say it took the wind out of your sails, because you rattled off seven straight and it was his first start as a member of the team. But man, that was a little bit of a whimper to end the homestand. And obviously you still went 5-1. So
yeah.
I'm more than okay with that. It's just like you wanted to end it on a better point than that.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And the fourth inning did. It took all the wind out of my sails. Like, that was that was a very boring game last night, mostly because the offense just really – the non-competitive at-bats against Michael Wacha. And then you have the Roman – like, coming off of the Roman extension, you're kind of expecting, like, all right, like, bang, like, here we go. Like, now we go. Like, which, like, they've been going, but, like, all right, like, here, we got a jolt. Like, we got, like – the guy is locked up for however long at a solid number. Like, obviously he gets robbed of that home run, which kind of changed the tenor of the game too, because at that point it was still a one run game, right?
Yep.
Yeah. So it would have tied the game, and it 29, the reverse unicorn, 29 out of 30 ballparks. And then Yeah, and then Dustin May does what he does in the fourth inning. It was not a very entertaining baseball game last night, and part of it was because the team wasn't playing well, and part of it was because Dustin May is just a tough watch.
He is a tough watch. Like, that's all you can really say about it, and then it just got away from you. And I will say, Chris Murphy looked a little bit shaky. I remember texting you. I was like, if May can only go, like, four innings, I bet we see Chris Murphy for two. Ultimately, they ended up, he needed to get the last out of the fourth inning, and then they still had him go two extra innings off of that. So I'm not too concerned about that. Like, in terms of your long relief guy, I think you can take you can take it every now and then, but he also didn't even allow a run. So I think he had a couple
of was better than May, like comfortably better than May.
Yeah, I think he was the one who hit a couple batters like right off the inning and then ended up in the bases loaded, right?
Yes.
I think that was the sixth.
He did hit the first two batters of one inning. Let me
might have been top six or I don't remember, but either way, he got out of that game.
Yeah, Jonathan India hit by pitch, John Rave hit by pitch, Kyle Isbell strikeout, Randall Grichuk flyout, intentional walk, ground out.
Yeah, which by the way, some of these Royals outfielders I've just never heard of.
John Rave,
Lofton. Like, who the hell are these people? Just creative players.
When I was driving in to the station on Tuesday night or whatever night I had the overnight, but Will was like, and John Rave steps to the plate. I was like, who in the flying fuck is John Rave? Like, that is not a real guy. It can't. Yeah.
And they didn't have a whole lot of success, but I mean, Rave's batting 187 on the year. He had two hits last night. It's just like, you can't let these guys beat you. I think that's been a problem all year. Is just allowing way more production from the bottom half of the lineup than you should. But then, yeah, the game unwinded once Jordan Hicks came in, and Isaiah Campbell is really bad at baseball, so he kind of just conceded the win from there.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I don't have too much more on that one other than Dustin May is a tough watch. That's my takeaway from Dustin May. Tough watch.
Yeah, the only other thing I really had here is, one, it sucks that the Blue Jays were playing the Rockies when you were playing some of the best baseball of the season and trying to make up ground there.
Their schedule gets pretty tough here coming up. They play the Dodgers and the Cubs. So,
yeah, so basically what you had out of the All-Star break, now the Blue Jays have to do that as well. And I think you also have at least one more series against them. It could be two. Let me see if I can pull this up fast. No, just one more against the Blue Jays, and that's towards the end of the year. I think it's the second to last series of the season, but a lot could change by then. That could be a big series too, with potentially AL East division crown implications. But the Yankees, man, Jesus, what are we doing down there?
They are awful. Yeah. Well, and I've been saying this the entire last two seasons, that the Yankees just aren't that good. They have two good players, and now both of those two good players are injured, and we're seeing the results. I mean, Devin Williams is just not built for the New York market. Like, I want to say that it was Rafael Enjoyer tweeted, like, say something nice about Jordan Hicks. In the time frame that he's been on the Red Sox, he still has a lower ERA than Devin Williams in that same time span. which is hilarious, but yeah, they're not a good ball club. Like Volpe, it's always the same story with some of these Yankees prospects. Volpe, oh, he's the next Jeter. He's this, he's that. Oh, Yasson Dominguez, he's the Martian. He's the greatest thing since sliced bread. He's been a top 100 prospect since your grandparents were 5 years old. Like, he's going to be stupendous. He's got a cool nickname. Like, if Jason Dominguez didn't have a nickname like the Martian, he wouldn't have even been a top 100 prospect. Like, he sucks. That team sucks. And, like, for them, like I mentioned it earlier, but for them to have the deadline that they had and have those obnoxious-ass fans victory lapping, this is the greatest bullpen ever assembled, and then have them immediately, like, they could not have more promptly blown a massive lead to the Miami Marlins en route to a Marlins sweep. It's just, hilarious.
So funny. So funny. And they didn't address their starting pitching needs either. Like, behind Max Fried, there's a hell of a lot more question marks, I'd say, than even the Red Sox rotation.
And even Fried hasn't been great as of late.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the Yankees are in that third wild card spot, but they're 2.5 games behind the Red Sox, a game behind the Mariners, and then you have, I don't count the Guardians. I don't see them making the playoffs. But you have the Rangers breathing down your necks at only a game and a half back there. So, I mean, now it's put up or shut up time, and I know the Red Sox have two more series against the Yankees as these last 40 or so games wrap up here. So, you could have a chance to bury them.
The new schedule kind of sucks. Like, so I love the fact that you see every team every year. Like, when I was living in Chicago, like, I got the Red Sox every year playing in on the south side. But I like every other year they would go to Wrigley or something like that.
Right.
But it takes away some of these division rivalries. Like, there needs to be a happy ground. Like, there's a happy medium somewhere between the Red Sox and Yankees play each other for, what, four series a year, and mm-hmm. the first one doesn't come till June because they want the games to mean something more, and you see every team every year. Like, I do like that. Like, I want to go to PNC next year. Like, it gives you more of an opportunity to go around the league and, like, see some of the ballparks, but, like, is there a way that you can pick, like a chief rival within the division that you see more often than the rest of the division? Does that unbalance things too much? Like, I think these are conversations that need to be had, because it sucks that the Red Sox and Yankees, and I know the Yankees suck now, but, like, you see them, we saw them twice in a 2-week span, and then you don't see them again until, what, late August, early September?
Pretty much, yeah. I think their next series is, like, August 19th, that weekend?
Yeah, I think it's, like, the 20th, like, 19th.
Oh, yes, 4th, yes.
Or 19th through the 23rd, something like that.
The 21st through the 23rd, or no, 21st through the 24th. Jeez, yeah, calendars.
Zach and David versus math in that one.
That was horrible.
Yeah.
Oh, but yeah. No, the point
there stands. There needs to be a medium, like a happy medium with that, because it sucks that you don't see them that often anymore.
Also, not to mention here, the second half of this season, the Red Sox have played 6 series so far, and then they have 1, 2, 3. So they have 9 series in the second half before they play a division opponent in the Orioles. And that's only a 2-gamer. That's weird.
Yeah, I don't understand what the scheduling is there.
Yeah, like, I didn't actually know that.
Usually the 2-gamers you see interleague.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I felt like the past couple years it's been 2-gamers versus the Braves.
Yeah, yeah, it has. Yeah, they played 2 in Atlanta, and then they came back and played 2 here for the 4 games mm-hmm. that they played against them.
It's silly. Like, I don't understand why. I guess you want more juice to the division rival games as you head into September, but it's like, we're in the heat of a playoff race right now, and it's kind of more tough to make up ground when you're not playing these teams nearly as much.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, I use the Yankees as the example just because that's your, like, mm-hmm. chief rival. But, like, the Blue Jays, they haven't seen the Blue Jays in how long? June? Ooh, like, early June? Question. Like, like you said, it's just tough to make up ground on these teams. Like, especially I know the Red Sox swept the Rockies the same way the Blue Jays did, but you're playing good ball and you see the Blue Jays, the Blue Jays are playing the Rockies. Yeah, June 27th through the 29th was the last time they saw the Blue Jays drop 2 out of 3. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I'm kind of okay that they haven't seen the Blue Jays in a while, because they've kind of had your number all season. But, like, this team is very different from the last time those two teams have played. And could we see a different result? I'm way more confident in that now than I was before. And it's just, you don't play them until the end of September, and then that's it. So maybe, a lot depends on how you play other teams. And I guess that applies to every division race, but it's like, I don't know. You just have to root for a lot of losses, and you can't really control your own destiny a whole lot.
Yeah. Yeah. You're spending more time rooting for the Blue Jays to lose than mm-hmm. anything else. Or that can be said for any of the teams in front of you. When the right. Yankees were ahead of them, when the Mariners were ahead of them, it was just like, it makes scoreboard watching a lot more relevant earlier in the season, but it also is kind of taking some of the juice out of the division.
Yeah, totally agree. Did you have anything else before we preview the Padres series here?
I can save the Peyton Tolley thing till like my last thought.
Okay. Oh, we did have the Narvaez injury that I don't think we touched on yet.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. It doesn't seem like it's going to be too bad, we hope, but they also said that it wasn't anything to worry about after the game on Tuesday when he initially got hurt. I guess we'll know more tomorrow. Yeah. I guess we'll know more tomorrow if Connor Wong's in the lineup, but I know he got a hit yesterday, but like, oh boy, is he useless.
Yeah, and it's another thing you should have addressed at the deadline, getting an actual backup catcher. I don't have many thoughts past that, but yeah. So we can preview the Padres series here. So that'll start on Friday night, so tomorrow. And it is at 9:40 p.m. Game 1, Walker Buehler versus old friend Nick Pivetta, which is kind of poetic here.
Pivetta is having a resurgent season for him, kind of putting the pieces together on everything that you were hoping he would be, and at times showed flashes of being in Boston. It sucks that it's coming in San Diego with the Padres. 128 2/3 innings pitched to a 2.73 ERA, but it has been the Nick Pivetta that you would remember with the Red Sox. I mean, there are starts where it's just complete blow-ups, and then starts where he's really good. It's just been way more consistent on the really good starts this year. Striking out batters at a 27% clip, which is actually down from last year of 29, or just a hair under 29. But similarly to, as always, with Nick Pivetta, he's not walking a ton of guys, a 6.3% walk percentage. But the ball does get hit really hard off of him, 11th percentile barrel percentage, 29th percentile hard hit percentage, a lot of fly balls. I think part of it is just the park. Like, you can give up a lot of fly balls at it's not Petco still, is it? Or is it still it Petco? Is. Oh, okay. You can give up a lot of fly balls at Petco because it's a bigger outfield and you don't have that giant 37-foot wall like right on top of you to give up home runs at. Let me pull up the home runs per nine. This year, but 1.73 last year compared to a 0.98 this year on the homer per nine. So that's probably that is the biggest difference for Pivetta this year and last year. Of course, it was a 4.14 last year, but again, the FIP is a 3.20 on Pivetta. So he kind of signals that you're due for some regression, but again, at a certain point, like, I think those expected numbers are good at the beginning of the season to say that guys are going to bounce back. But now at this point, Pivetta's made 22 starts, like I said, 128 2/3 innings of a 2.73 ERA. I think that's probably closer to what he's going to be for the year, even if the expected numbers say a little different.
Yeah, it does suck that you ended up letting Pivetta walk. And like right after, it helped that you got the comp pick for Pivetta, and then you're like, okay, let's go get Alex Bregman. But even still, how good would the rotation look if you just subbed out Pivetta for Walker Buehler here?
Oh, incredible.
It's so much better.
Yeah. Yeah, it really does blow that's the way that things went. But what can you do, I guess, at this point? Hindsight's 2020. Yeah. But another guy, we talked about not knowing what these guys look like in the playoffs. It was only in a relief role, but Nick Pivetta was really good in those 21 playoffs.
Yeah, that's a good point too. I mean, it'll be interesting to see him again. I think he's kind of a hothead. He's intense on the mound for sure. So yeah. I bet he'll be pitching with some extra juice against the team that sort of gave up on him. But yeah, we'll see. I mean, this is the game where I'm like, yeah, this could get ugly. Just Walker Buehler, especially with the Padres being more familiar with Buehler's arsenal than maybe some other teams. And even still, he's just been so bad this year that I don't know if that'll matter. But I definitely have this as a scheduled loss.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. But game two, I don't know if this is accurate, but on the MLB game day, it said that Michael King is making his return against Lucas Giolito.
I believe so. Okay. Yeah, I believe so. This comes from Dennis Lynn of The Athletic. King is slated to return from the 60-day injured list to start Saturday's game versus the Red Sox.
Okay, sweet.
So, yeah. Michael King, he hasn't, Boston College legend, shout out, pending free agent also. He hasn't pitched since May 18th. It was kind of a weird injury. They pushed him back from his start and said that he slept on his shoulder weird and that they weren't expecting it to be anything serious, and he hasn't pitched since. So first start since then, but he was really good when he was pitching. It was 55 and two thirds innings, 10.35 K per nine, 2.59 ERA, 3.24 FIP. This is one where I think you can kind of get to him. Again, it's a guy that you don't really know what the leash is going to be like. In his first first and only rehab appearance in AAA El Paso, he struck out five, but he allowed six earned on four hits over three and a third, and only built up to 61 pitches. So I assume he's going to be on a little bit of a shorter leash, maybe around like the 80, 85 pitch mark to see where it, see what things look like for him. But again, this is a guy that hasn't pitched since the middle of May. So hopefully you can get to him in a game where he doesn't have his A stuff.
Yeah. Not much more to add there. I think Giolito's been rolling, and it helps that you're facing a guy who hasn't pitched in a couple months now. So game three, the finale, will be Brian Bello versus Dylan Cease.
Yeah, Dylan Cease, we talked about him a lot in the – well, you talked about him a lot in the trade deadline primer. He was a guy that a lot of people thought was going to get moved, and that just ultimately wasn't the case when things were all said and done. He's having a bit of a down year – not a bit of a down year. He's having a down year compared to his standards, which sucks for him being in a walk year. But it's 123 and a third innings pitched over – geez, why can I not read? 23 starts, 4.60 ERA, but he's a guy who his FIP is much lower than what his ERA is, almost a full run lower at 3.52. The strikeout stuff has still been there, 11.82 K per nine, but the home run ball is really biting him this year. It's a 1.24 homer per nine compared to an 0.86 and an 0.97, and even going back to 2022, an 0.78. So that's really where he's getting crushed here. So team like the Red Sox, who does hit a lot of home runs, hopefully that's a guy that you can get to a little bit. And again, like it feels like from a name recognition standpoint, the Padres have the edge pitching wise, especially when you consider that first game where they undoubtedly have the edge starting pitching wise. But I think King and Cease, you're kind of running into them at least with King running into them at the right time. Like these are guys that you can get to.
Yeah. So I totally agree. I think in terms of predictions, I'm going to say you drop the Walker Buehler start and then win the next two.
Yeah. I'm right there with you. Two out of three, you drop tomorrow and take Saturday, Sunday.
Yeah. So I don't know. I think if you go maybe 4-2 in this road trip, even 3-3, you're feeling pretty good as you head back to Fenway. It's two tough teams. Obviously, you swept the Astros before, but it can get a lot different when you're on the road. So I wouldn't expect another sweep there. But if you can take care of business, you're still in good shape.
Yeah, and then things kind of lighten up after that, too. You have the Marlins right, and then the two-gamer against the Orioles before the Yankees. But even after that, it's Orioles for four, Pirates for three. So things really soften up here for you coming out. So I agree. If you can go 4-2, 3-3 on this road trip, you're still in a good spot.
Yeah. And then you had a final thought, right?
Yeah. Peyton Tolley got really aggressive with him after just a month in AA. Yeah. They already moved him up to AAA. Ian Kundle and Chris Hatfield on the last Sox Prospects pod were talking about how they started deloading him pitch count wise. Could be for a couple different reasons. Either they just want to preserve the arm or they're starting to prepare him for a bullpen role, similar to what we saw, not exactly one for one, but similar to what we've seen the White Sox do with both Garrett Crochet and Chris Sale in their early years. Obviously, Crochet came up right after being drafted out of Tennessee. I believe the same for Sale out of Florida Gulf Coast. But this is a guy that could come up and work out of the bullpen in a relief role as soon as this year. We'll see. He said that they haven't told him anything, but he said that he would start. he would relief, and he would bring water for anyone, anything he could do to get up to the big league roster. I think we're going to see him this year, depending on how the stuff looks. If they do decide to transition him to a relief role for the rest of the season, but like seeing him from that arm angle with a nasty slider and the fastball that he has, I think there's a real potential for the stuff to really ramp up and be an electric arm out of the pen. And like, he's built like a big shit house, and he's got the mustache, and like, he's a fiery guy on the mound. If you've ever watched him pitch, like, I don't know if you've seen that video from when he was at TCU where he punched the guy out to end the inning. He's like going across his chest with the frogs. Oh, yeah. Like he's a guy that like that kind of attitude plays at Fenway in October. So like, I'm excited to see him. I hope we do see him.
No doubt. And it's the one thing I'll say is, how would you handle the lefty-righty thing out of the bullpen? Because obviously Tolley is another lefty there, so what do you think they would do?
Honestly, I don't think it super matters on that front. Like, I think they would just, if they were going to bring him up, like I said, I would DFA Hicks and bring up David Sandlin, which that's another one. They've moved Sandlin. He made one start in AAA, and then they moved him to a strictly relief role. But, like, to me, I'm taking Isaiah Campbell out of the bullpen. I'm taking Jordan Hicks out of the bullpen, and I'm putting Tolley and Sandlin in and just letting it bark from them, too. Like, Sandlin, we've seen him in bullpens in the offseason pump up to, like, 101. So that's – and that was always the most likely path for him as a reliever. But for Tolley, I don't really think it matters. Like, one of my biggest gripes with the rule changes that they've made is the three-batter minimum, because it's completely eliminated the lefty specialist. Like, you need to be able to get lefties and righties out no matter which side you're throwing from in the bullpen. And ultimately, the goal with Tolley is for him to continue to be a starter. So I don't think that that's really going to matter.
Yeah, okay. Totally agree. And I know you're more of a prospect guy than me, so I'll definitely defer to you on that. But yeah, I hope we see him at some point this season. And the only other thing I had is I wanted to shout out our guy, Jacob Lasner, on the new job in Pittsburgh. Yeah. He's a great guy. He absolutely works harder than anyone I've ever seen, and I'm super happy for him. I know we both are, and he's absolutely going to kill it down in Pittsburgh. So shout out to him.
Yes, shout out to Jacob. Congratulations on the new job.
Yes, absolute goat. But yeah, that'll do it, I think. So as always, thanks so much for listening, and we'll check in with you guys again next week.
Later.